Live from the historic parsonage of 19th century gospel minister George Norcross in downtown Carlisle, Pennsylvania. It's Iron Sharpens Iron, a radio platform on which pastors, Christian scholars, and theologians address the burning issues facing the church and the world today. Proverbs 27, verse 17 tells us, "Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another." Matthew Henry said that in this passage, quote, "We are cautioned to take heed whom we converse with, and directed to have in view in conversation to make one another wiser and better." It is our hope that this goal will be accomplished over the next hour, and we hope to hear from you, the listener, with your own questions. Now here's our host, Chris Arnson.
Good afternoon, Cumberland County, Pennsylvania, and the rest of humanity living on the planet Earth who are listening via live streaming. This is Chris Arnson, your host of Iron Sharpens Iron, wishing you all a happy Thursday on this 10th day of November 2016. I'm delighted to be interviewing for the very first time today on Iron Sharpens Iron, Simonetta Carr. She is going to be discussing two of her latest books. The first we are going to be addressing is Martin Luther, which is a part of the Christian Biographies for Young Readers series published by Reformation Heritage Books. And then in the second hour, we're going to be discussing a figure from history that is a lot less known. In fact, I did not know about her until I found out about Simonetta Carr's book about her, Rene of France, who is quite a fascinating figure. She was the wife of the Duke of Ferrara, who was a servant of the Pope, and yet she was a correspondent with John Calvin. So I'm sure we're going to learn some fascinating information about Rene of France. And it's my honor and privilege to welcome you to Iron Sharpens Iron for the very first time, Simonetta Carr. Hello, Simonetta.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Yes, and Simonetta is originally from Italy, so our audience may have to be a little patient because she does have an accent, but I seem to be able to understand her completely fine. Before we even go into your books that we're going to be discussing, Simonetta, I'd like to know something about your background in Italy, what religion, if any, you were raised in, and how you eventually came to embrace the Reformed faith of the Protestant Reformation.
Yeah, I was raised Roman Catholic. I met someone when I was about 18. I met someone, actually, and a group of Americans that were in Italy doing some evangelizing, and so they introduced me to the gospel. Anyway, it took a while for me to be hooked up with the church because they just preached the gospel. They gave me a copy of the Gospel of John. They didn't stick around, so but it was the seed that was sown. And I ended up eventually marrying an American. My husband is American, too. And we had 8 children. So I spent most of my life raising children. But, yeah, I studied to become a teacher. I was an elementary teacher in Italy. But, yeah, most of the time I was I've been homeschooling my children. And then we came to America only about 20 years ago, so not too long ago. Here I attend Christ United Reformed Church. And I don't know what else you want to know.
Yes, the United Reformed Church is a very fine denomination. I have friends in that church, and I know that many people who left the Christian Reformed Church denomination because of liberalism that began to dominate there, came into the United Reformed Church. And send my greetings to everyone there at the URCNA that you know, and I look forward to interviewing as many United Reformed pastors as I can. I really have a very high regard for the three forms of unity and much of what my Reformed brethren in that denomination hold in common with me as a Reformed Baptist. And such a pleasure and honor to have you on the program. Now, were you an author before you became a believer in the doctrines of the Reformation?
Not really, no. I always liked to write, but when I was young even a little later, I just wrote articles for magazines, newspapers, magazines. That's about it. That's the extent of my writing. I've done a lot of translations from English to Italian. So to me, that's a form of writing because
translation.
Yeah, you have to kind of rewrite in your own language. That's what I did. And the first book I wrote was actually Reformation Heritage Books, which is the first the book about Calvin. That was written in 2008. So before then, no, I didn't write any books.
Well, this is, you've got quite a number of accolades for this book that you have written on Martin Luther. Let me read a couple of them. Robert Kolb, who is professor of systematic theology at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, a very well-known seminary of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, he writes, Carr leads readers into the world in which Martin Luther grew up and then served the church and his society with sensitivity to the times and places where his life unfolded. The adventure of bringing the gospel to his people and the drama of his testimony to the truth come alive as we follow his footsteps into the heart of the German government when he stood up to the emperor and into his home and the joys he had in raising his family. An excellent introduction to the life of the great reformer. And we also have Carl Truman, who has been a guest a couple of times on Iron Sharpens Iron. He is the Paul Woolley Professor of Church History at Westminster Theological Seminary in Pennsylvania and pastor of Cornerstone Presbyterian Church, which is a congregation within the Orthodox Presbyterian Church denomination in Ambler, Pennsylvania. And he writes, I'm a big fan of both Martin Luther and Simonetta Carr, so this book is a dream come true, an author-subject marriage made in heaven. Simonetta beautifully captures both the life and the key thoughts of Dr. Martin and does so in a manner which is fast-paced and exciting. Parents will love reading this book to their children, and children will love reading it for themselves. Well, quite a commendation for this book. And tell us about what exactly you have put into writing for younger people in regard to the life of Martin Luther in this book that you have written.
Well, I wrote about the life of Martin Luther. I also tried to explain his theology and what he taught. And of course, what Martin Luther did for the church is, we could write a few books. So I had to choose the most important topics and the things he's mostly famous for.
Yes, in fact, I'm going to give our email address out right now for any listeners who would like to join us on the air with a question of your own for Simonetta Carr. Our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Please give us your first name, your city and state, and your country of residence if you live outside of the USA. Now, obviously, the Reformation is a very sensitive issue when it comes to our relationships with our Roman Catholic friends and family. Did any of your family members react in a negative way, not only when you converted to the theology of the Protestant Reformation and the gospel, what we would consider the gospel of the Bible and the gospel of Jesus Christ. Did you get much of a negative reaction or opposition from your family, and then on top of that, writing about it?
No. I don't know if all my family and friends really totally understood what I believe. You know, some people did, some people didn't. But but they were not hostile to it. In fact, they were very interested.
They were very interested in what you've done?
Yeah.
Well, that's
family had.
Well, that's a blessing from God, because obviously there can be at times there are people who have experienced a lot of hostility, and even have been shunned by their own family and totally left out of the family gatherings and so on as a result of these things. But your family is interested in what you in the transformation that has taken place in you.
Yeah, I wouldn't say they embraced it, but they understand, yeah.
Well, just to let our listeners know something more about this book, it is a beautiful hardback book that is illustrated, beautifully illustrated, which obviously is ideal when you are speaking of books related to younger readers and children and so on. The illustrations were done by Troy Howell, and this is a really high-quality book that Simonetta has written. And you start in the book from when Martin Luther was a law student, and he eventually became a monk. Can you tell us a little bit, a summary of the events that took place in Martin Luther's life that led him from aspiring to be an attorney to entering into a monastery?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually start from the time when he was a child, because, you know, children are always interested in that. And he grew up pretty much like any other child at that time, and I have a funny story about the sausages, which kids always like. Apart from that, he, since you want to know about the transformation, he was a student of law, and one time he went home to visit his family, and this event is pretty famous. When he went back to college, he was caught in a thunderstorm, and at that point he was filled with terror, because he didn't think he was ready to face God. And so he made a promise to a saint, because that's all part of the Roman Catholic theology of the medieval theology. He made a promise to a saint that he would become a monk. Becoming a monk was seen as a very high form of serving God at that time. And so he kept his promise, and he became a monk, even if his father was against it. So he was actually a little conflicted at that time, because his father was against it, so he felt he had to disobey his father to become a monk, but he did. So that was this first transformation, I guess, of his life, going into the monastery.
And what was it that really started to challenge his thinking and get him to become really like a Berean and examine what the Church of Rome was teaching in light of what the scriptures truly taught?
Yeah, I think he had a very sensitive conscience, and he understood very well God's justice and God's holiness. And then the church at that time didn't really have an answer to how can we as sinners reconcile with the holy God that he sent. He didn't see a very clear answer to that. And the church had different means, in, like confession and then penance and different offerings you can make and different different ways that they had to offer to make a person feel reconciled with God, but he knew that that was not enough. He just felt it was never enough, and he kept going to confession to confess his sins. He would go, to confess his sins and then leave, and he realized that actually we sin all the time. Even a little thought could be sinful. And so he went back to confession, and he actually drove his superiors a bit frustrated because he kept going back. But their answer to it was just, oh, don't worry about the little sins. And he knew that God, for God, every sin is equally sinful and equally hateful, so he just couldn't brush it off. I kind of relate to that personally, because when I was a Roman Catholic, I had the same thing as a child. I was always very convicted about my sins, and I actually wrote them all down to make sure I wouldn't forget anything. I know it was terrible, because then I finally realized I couldn't do it. There was no way I could write all my sins down, and so I relate to that. You know, it's impossible. You have a bad thought about something, and some jealousy or coveting, anything. And finally, I remember I went to confession once, and I said, I broke every commandment, but I didn't kill anybody. So I thought I could just do that way. I was covered. Yeah. So anyway, that's how he felt. And he, for him, it was a very deep, deep crisis, and he was searching scriptures at that time.
Yes, and one of the key figures that propelled him to begin to protest some of the practices of the church was mm-hmm. Johann Tetzel, who was basically coercing money out of the ignorant people in the Roman Catholic Church, placing fear in their hearts that they needed to give money in order to not only lessen their own time in purgatory, but to get the souls of their deceased loved ones out of purgatory. And there's that famous jingle, for lack of a better term, that was popular then: as soon as the coin in the coffer rings, the soul from purgatory springs. And that really angered, that began to anger Martin Luther, did it not? Isn't that one of the main reasons he posted the 95 Theses to the door of the church in Wittenberg, Germany?
Yes, yes. He was very, angered, but especially very saddened by that. I think he had a very high view of God and sin, and he just didn't understand how God could forgive a sin just because we put some money in a box, or just because we go to Rome and climb a stair on our knees. He just didn't think that was enough, and also he was wondering if the church really had the authority to decrease the punishment decided by God, if in fact God had decreed some punishment, could the church just decrease that punishment just by giving a piece of paper, basically, because that's what they were doing. So he had questions. He wasn't trying to create a great revolution at that time. He just basically wanted to discuss those questions with other scholars, with other teachers, and that's why he posted the 95 theses.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that enormous... Well, I guess a lot of it would depend upon one's aesthetic taste, but some would call it an enormous, beautiful edifice. Some would say it is gaudy and grotesque, but the St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican, that was built on the money from these scare tactics of the Church of Rome to get their souls of their loved ones out of purgatory through their contributions to the church.
Yes.
And this is where the famous Sistine Chapel is and so on, that Michelangelo had painted. We do have a couple of listeners who have already written in to us. We have a listener in Slovenia named Joe, who says, I'm wondering if Sister Simonetta is familiar with Primož Trubar, the Slovenia reformer from Italy's neighboring country to the east. He is considered the father of the Slovenian people because he created the Slovenian language by being the first person to put it into writing. He did this by writing a reformed catechism in Slovenian and translating the Bible into Slovenian while in exile in Germany. Could she possibly study his life and write a book about him in a similar way that she did for Martin Luther? Do you know anything about this reformer, Simonetta? Primož?
Yeah, I know just about as much as you just said that I know, or a little less. That's about all I know. But I have looked into it in the past. He's a very interesting figure, yes. I don't know. Maybe one day I could write about it, yeah.
Well, Joe, keep praying that Simonetta finds it within her schedule to eventually write a book about that so you could use it as an evangelism tool over there in Slovenia. And thank you for providing your United States address, Joe, for your daughter, because you are getting a free copy of this beautiful book published by Reformation Heritage Books called Martin Luther, which is a part of the Christian Biographies for Young Readers. This gorgeous hardcover, full color illustrated book. And so we thank you for that question, and you should be getting that book, God willing, within a week or so. Compliments not only of Reformation Heritage Books, but also of Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service, who is shipping that out to you, cvbbs.com, CV as in Cumberland Valley, bbs.com. We also have a question from Erin in Indianapolis, Indiana. She says, thank you for interviewing Simonetta. I'm so thankful she has written such excellent biographies for children to learn about Reformed heroes of the faith. Has she considered writing such high-caliber books for adults, biographies of other non-fiction subjects? I believe you have written books for adults. Isn't your book on Lady Jane for adults?
Well, no. Lady Jane is part of the same series, Christian Biographies for Young Readers. The one for adults is... Renée of France.
That's right, I'm sorry. Right, the one we're going to be covering in the second hour.
Right, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you, Erin, and you are also getting a free copy of this beautiful book provided by Reformation Heritage Books, Martin Luther. So keep your eye out for that in the mail. Thank you very much, Erin, from Indianapolis, Indiana, for contributing to our program today. Let's see, we have another listener. We have Seth in Randallsman, North Carolina. What would Dr. Carr say to people who disavow reading or advocating books by Luther based on his remarks about the epistle by James and his comments on Jews. I have pastors who regularly tell me we shouldn't recommend anything from Luther. Obviously, I disagree with their view. Yes, there is the story that Luther thought that James was an epistle of straw. He wanted to throw Jimmy in the stove, is the famous quote. Whether or not that's an actual quote or not, I don't know. But he did have a conflict with James because it, on the surface, wrongly appeared to him to be teaching that works contributed to faith for justification before God and, you know, in order to enter eternal life. But do you have any comments on that, Simonetta?
Well, Luther was came very early in the Reformation. We can practically say he was the father of the Reformation, although there were a few minor reformers before him. So I think there's a lot of things that he developed in his thought as time went on. When he posted the 95 Theses, for example, he was only asking some questions, and he was mainly wondering about repentance and whether indulgences were really a proper way of showing repentance. Then later, he developed his a doctrine of justification by faith alone, but it all came gradually. So I think he was still learning a lot, and if we look at the reformers that came after him and the confessions that we have, confessions of faith, especially in Westminster or other reforms of unity. Okay, at that point, the Reformed faith was more mature. But he was just working through certain things. I think his writings are wonderful about justification by faith alone. They really help us to understand the difference between the law and the gospel and many other things about, you know, God's grace. There is so much in Luther, so we can't just put him aside just because of a couple of things that he got wrong. And the second thing you mentioned was that, did you say the Jews? I didn't get it very well.
Yes, there are many people who are very critical of Luther because he, apparently, from what I have heard from history, he was expecting the Jews to convert en masse after the Reformation had a stronghold, and he, when that did not happen, when, you know, there was still only a trickle of Jewish people coming to faith in Christ, he was furious by this, and I also had heard that there were rabbis writing horrible negative pamphlets about him as well. And so he had these outbursts of anger where he wrote horrible things about the Jews, about destroying their places of business and forcing them to work in the fields and all kinds of things like that, that even the Nazis had taken some of that literature and used it to further their own cause. But Luther was a sinner. He was a sinner saved by grace, and obviously that was some of the fruit of a life that was not 100% purified, as no one is here on this earth. Am I right?
Right. Also, at that time, that attitude toward the Jews, as bad as it, as uncondemnable as it is, was very prominent at that time, mm-hmm. So among Christians, and it was definitely wrong, but it was very prominent. So I remember reading actually Carl Truman saying that we should not be as much surprised when we read Luther's condemnation of the Jews. We should be more surprised that he actually favored the Jews. He wrote a very positive booklet about the Jews initially, which was an exception at that time. So that was even more surprising. The second part, yeah, he was more falling into the mentality of his times, and it was definitely wrong. It was very regrettable the way he handled it. But, yeah, people at that time, they made lots of mistakes, and we are making lots of mistakes too, hopefully. We're learning.
Yes, and at that time also, the rhetoric between those of different religions was very, very harsh, a lot harsher than it is today. Seth, if you give us your full mailing address there in Randleman, North Carolina, you will receive a free copy of this beautiful hardcover, full-color illustrated book, Martin Luther, a part of the Christian Biographies for Young Readers series by Simonetta Carr. And so we look forward to getting your full mailing address. We have to go to a break right now. If you'd like to join us on the air with a question of your own for Simonetta Carr, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com. chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Please give us your first name, your city and state, and your country of residence if you live outside of the USA. Don't go away. We will be right back after these messages from our sponsors.
Chris Arnzen here, and I can't wait to head down to Atlanta, Georgia. And here's my friend Dr. James White to tell you why.
Hi, I'm James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. I hope you join me at the G3 Conference hosted by Pastor Josh Bice and Praise Mill Baptist Church at the Georgia International Convention Center in Atlanta, January 19th through the 21st, in celebration of the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation. I'll be joined by Paul Washer, Steve Lawson, D.A. Carson, Vodi Balcom, Conrad Mbewe, Phil Johnson, Rosaria Butterfield, Todd Friel, and a host of other speakers who are dedicated to the pillars of what G3 stands for, Gospel, Grace, and Glory. For more details, go to g3conference.com. That's g3conference.com.
Thanks, James. Make sure you greet me at the Iron Sharpens Iron exhibit booth while you're there.
Charles Haddon Spurgeon once said,
"Give yourself unto reading. The man who never reads will never be read. He who never quotes will never be quoted. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read."
Solid Ground Christian Books is a publisher and book distributor who takes these words of the Prince of Preachers to heart. The mission of Solid Ground Christian Books is to bring back treasures of the past to minister to Christians in the present and future, and to publish new titles that address burning issues in the church and the world. Since its beginning in 2001, Solid Ground has been committed to publish God-centered, Christ-exalting books for all ages. We invite you to go treasure hunting at solid-ground-books.com. That's solid-ground-books.com and see what priceless literary gems from the past or present you can unearth from Solid Ground. Solid Ground Christian Books is honored to be a weekly sponsor of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
Iron Sharpens Iron Radio is sponsored by Harvey Cedars, a year-round Bible conference and retreat center nestled on the Jersey Shore. Harvey Cedars offers a wide range of accommodations to suit groups up to 400. For generations, Christians have enjoyed gathering and growing at Harvey Cedars. Each year, thousands of high school and college students come and learn more about God's Word. An additional 9,000 come annually to Harvey Cedars as families, couples, singles, men, women, pastors, seniors, and missionaries. 90 miles from New York City, 70 miles from Philly, and 95 miles from Wilmington, and easily accessible, scores of notable Christian groups frequently plan conferences at Harvey Cedars, like the Navigators, InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, Campus Crusade, and the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals. Find Harvey Cedars on Facebook or at hcbible.org.
hcbible.org. Call 609-494-5689. 609-494-5689. Harvey Cedars, where Christ finds people and changes lives. Welcome back. This is Chris Arnz, and if you just tuned us in, our guest today for the full 2 hours is Simonetta Carr. She is from Italy, now resides in San Diego, California, here in the United States. And we today are discussing two of her books. For the first hour, we are discussing her book on Martin Luther, which is a part of the Christian Biographies for the Young Readers, published by Reformation Heritage Books. The second hour, we are going to be addressing a figure from history that is a lot less known than Martin Luther. In fact, I did not even know of her existence until reading this book by Simonetta Carr on René of France. And that is a work published by Evangelical Press, or EP Books. And if you'd like to join us on the air with a question of your own for Simonetta Carr, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com. chrisarnzen@gmail.com. We have someone writing with an alias from Valley Stream, Long Island, New York, Lam Lam. Lam Lam says, please express thanks to Miss Carr for writing the Christian Biography series that is interesting and informative. I would like to ask her, I read in one of your other books in the series that using the word reformer to title or describe Martin Luther, is there a glossary list in the back of the book how parents are to explain the idea of reformation or reformer, and how can parents, as when teaching their younger children, to connect all the dots among the series in relationship to the chronicle as a whole picture in the Reformation history? Did you get that question, Simonetta?
Yes. So those were two questions.
Yes.
I think the first one was about the glossary. I have talked to my publisher a couple of times about including a glossary. I could ask him again. The problem is that the book is quite packed already, so if we add a glossary, we may have to cut out something else or reduce the pages for the story. But yeah, I can ask him again. That could be a good idea. Reformed, Reformation. I think actually I explained it in my first book about Calvin and... I was giving a talk in a school, and I asked the kids, and they understood it as Reformation, as a change for the better, changing something for the better, improving. So that's what the Reformers were trying to do. They were trying to change the church for the better and improving and overcoming its mistakes. So I don't know if I answered the first question.
Oh, that's fine. Well, thank you.
The second question was about... I forgot now.
if you were going to do something, write something that connects all the dots between all of the figures from history that you've written about.
Yeah, actually, that's another thing that we've been thinking about, you know, going back and forth, kind of like an overview of a church history. And that's such a big big job. I would have to really study a lot more than I have to do something like that. But we can see, you know, by doing something else, something simpler to connect those dots, because I can see the need for something like that. So, yeah, that's another thing I can talk to my publisher about.
Mm-hmm. And we have... Let's see. We have a couple more listeners here. And Well, before I go back to another listener, I'm going to ask a question of my own. How far into the story of Martin Luther's life do you take this book? Obviously, when he defies the magisterium, that he will not back down from what he believes to be biblically faithful and so on. How far into his life do you go with this book?
Well, I actually go to his death.
Mm-hmm.
So I pretty much cover his own life. Obviously, I don't cover every single event, but yeah, I give an overview of all his life.
And why do you think that it is important for children to know about things that we might ordinarily view as deeper subjects fit for adults, such as some of these deep theological issues that separate Roman Catholicism and the Protestant Reformation? Why do you think it's important for us to instill in the minds and hearts of children these things?
Well, as Protestants, I think we need to know what we believe and why we believe it. So if other people ask us, we know what to say. I have Catholic friends. They think that the only thing that divides us is that we don't believe that the Pope has authority over all Christians. But, you know, obviously, there's much more than that. So, most people don't know. And I think it's important for Protestants to know, fully know their faith, and fully know what they believe in.
And I think that you may be accidentally, I don't know if you're aware of this, but you're accidentally touching a button on your phone that keeps beeping.
Beeping?
There's something that you're doing with your phone that periodically it beeps. I think you're accidentally perhaps pressing a button with either...
Okay.
With that. But that's okay. We can deal with it.
Sorry.
That's all right. We have Casey in Kannapolis, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And Casey writes, can you ask Simonetta Carr about how we can have a modern reformation for our children today in the church? I'm not 100% sure what Casey means by that. And perhaps, Casey, if you want to clarify that with another email. But can you answer what he has written here? Can you ask Simonetta Carr about how we can have a modern reformation for our children today in the church?
Yeah, I'm not completely sure either, but I think what we can do is inform our children of what it means to be reformed. Maybe that's what she meant, just to teach them what the Reformation originally taught and why we still believe the same things. That would be a way for them to be more grounded in this doctrine.
Yeah, and there's plenty that the church needs to be reformed of today. Even within evangelicalism, there are a lot of things that would contradict what the Scripture teaches that are going on that children today might want to have something instilled within their hearts and minds to be little reformers of the future, if you will, because of the fact that, you know, the church has become a place of entertainment, and the church has become a place where our feelings and our needs are primary above the gospel of Jesus Christ, above the glory, majesty, and holiness of God. The things that selfishness seems to be at the height of what is happening in the modern Christian church, even in those churches that are the heirs of the Reformation, and it's sad to say. So perhaps that was a part of his intent. And by the way, Casey, yeah. I apologize if you are a woman. I keep calling you a he. I'm not really sure. I keep thinking of the, Casey Stengel and other men. And the mighty Casey has struck out, that famous baseball poem. But so I apologize if you are a woman, Casey. But by the way, Casey, if you give us your full mailing address, you are also getting a free copy of this gorgeous hardcover, full-color illustrated book, Martin Luther, by Simonetta Carr, a part of the Christian Biographies for Young Readers, published by Reformation Heritage Books. And we thank you for submitting that question. And I want, before we run out of time on this first hour, Simonetta, I want you to make sure that you provide our listeners with what you most want etched on their hearts and minds in regard to the life of Martin Luther and the book you have written here.
Well, I think Martin Luther, he's important in church history is mostly for his defense of the doctrine of justification by faith alone, which he didn't, obviously he didn't invent. It's a biblical doctrine and was taught by early church fathers too. But he was able to clarify it and to bring it back, and I think everything he wrote about that is very enlightening, and so I think that's probably the main thing that he is well known for. And if people just understand the gospel by reading this book, they understand what the gospel is and what it means to be reconciled by God by grace alone, through faith alone. That's already a major achievement if children can understand that much. Yes.
Yes, and it is. I think it is something that is very inspiring to know that. Even if you think that because you're outnumbered by thousands of times over by people who are in opposition to you as you stand for the truth of God and the Holy Scriptures, that you are not alone. If you are on God's side, and if He, more importantly, is on your side, then it doesn't matter how many people are opposing what you say or do if you're standing up for truth. That God will bring about whatever He desires to occur in that particular circumstance for His praise, honor, and glory. And you have the Protestant Reformation largely catching fire as it did and spreading all over the globe, largely due to this one Augustinian monk. Obviously, there were other people involved, but he is a key figure in history of all this occurring. And it also reminds me of centuries earlier with Athanasius. When Athanasius was standing up in defense of the deity of Jesus Christ, when nearly all of the bishops in the church had become Arian, or those who rejected the fact that Jesus was both God and man. And Athanasius didn't care how many people, even if they were leaders in the church, were in opposition to him. He stood firm, knowing that God was on his side. And that's a very inspiring thing to know, that what we can accomplish, even though we be outnumbered and frail and weak in and of ourselves, and even though we're sinners, God can do mighty things through us, can He not? Yeah, and I think that's a valuable lesson for children to know that when they may be being bullied or mocked or being made fun of, or they may be outcasts with other children because they are following Christ. These are important things for them to know.
And I think also Luther, one thing that also impressed me is his humility, because he didn't just go out to defy the church. In fact, he tried to respect it as much as possible. He wrote a letter to the Pope in full hope that the Pope would understand, and obviously the Pope didn't. But Luther thought through all his doctrines and his teachings, and he didn't just blurt them out and say, I'm right, you're wrong. In fact, in those days, it didn't even exist. Everyone was supposed to submit to the church, and I remember they asked Luther a question: Are you the only one who's right, basically? And it was a question that he considered very carefully. He didn't want to be the only one right and go against everyone else before him, but he was constrained by the truth, by what the Bible actually said.
Amen. Now, before we go into the topic of our second hour, which is going to be on René of France, I wanted to get a little bit more background of what is going on in Italy in regard to the gospel, since that is the home of your birth. And you obviously have a great love for Italy and the people there. You obviously still have relatives there and so on, and loved ones. It is very unusual for me to meet somebody from Italy who is a firm believer in Reformed theology. I've met many Italian Americans who are second or third generation, but you are from Italy. How prevalent are the doctrines of sovereign grace or Reformed theology in Italy today?
Well, not prevalent, obviously. There is a group of Christians there. There's different denominations. There's the Valdensians. The Valdensian Church is quite established there. I would say it's a little liberal. I would consider it liberal in many of their doctrines, but at least they're preaching the gospel. There's some evangelicals. What I'm very happy about is that now we have actually a Reformed church from our denomination, the URC. We have a church plant there, and that makes me very happy. And some people from there are coming to America to be trained. We have an Italian now in Westminster Seminary, California. He's going to go back and be a pastor there. There's a real lack of pastors, especially in the Reformed churches. There's one church in Milan, the one that is connected with that denomination, so it's Reformed and confessional. And there's a few other places around Italy where there are believers that are very interested in joining a Reformed church, but they can't transfer. So sometimes all they can do is use their computer and Skype on Sunday so they can hear the sermon. So obviously that's not ideal, but to give you an idea, I was in Grand Rapids yesterday, and there's a church at every corner. Many of them are very good, solid Reformed or Bible-believing churches. But in Italy, there's basically only one Reformed church in the whole country. So it makes us grateful for what we have here, and also makes us pray for the believers in Europe. It's probably not just Italy. I think it's most of Europe.
Now, as far as the state of the Roman Catholic Church in Italy, obviously we would view the Roman Catholic Church as heretical and in disobedience to the scriptures on many things. But are there people, are the majority of those Catholics in Italy, are they just nominal Catholics by name only, or are they fervently religious and going to their masses and saying their rosaries, or are most people just secular who may have a very faint identity as a Catholic?
Yeah, I think most people are nominal Catholics. They don't know much about their own doctrines. That's my experience, yeah. And so if you tell them you're a Protestant, they say, you know, good for you. They just think basically they just thank you. You either don't like the Pope or you don't believe in Mary, and they see it as a very superficial difference. But there are a few that are more committed and they understand. I mean, basically, the church, the Roman Catholic Church, they created the separation with the Protestants when they condemned us as accursed, you know, anathema in the Council of Trent. So most people don't know that. But if, you know, for the church, the Catholic Church to, you know, for the church to reunite, as some people hope we can do, they would have to change what they had decreed in the Council of Trent, and that would involve a lot, because to them, councils are infallible, you know. The
right, exactly.
Yeah,
in fact, it would be impossible for them to renounce the Council of Trent without crumbling as an institution. They would have to reject papal infallibility and all kinds of things.
I know. One thing will lead to the other, like a domino effect.
Right. In fact, I often will tell my Catholic friends and family members who are ecumenical, when they get upset with me, when I say that their gospel is false and that they have a different gospel than I do, and when they get upset with me, I point them to the fact that hundreds of years before I was born, the Council of Trent declared what I believe today to be the gospel. They declared it as something to be accursed, and they anathematized me before I was even born for believing in this. So therefore, I am not the bad guy here. Your church, the Roman Catholic Church, already has said that the gospel of the Reformation is a different gospel than theirs, and they declared our gospel false. So therefore, we recognize that they do have a different gospel. That's the only thing that we agree with Trent on, is in that regard. We believe that we, though, are the ones who have the true biblical gospel that Jesus Christ stood upon, and that they are the ones who have departed from the scriptures.
Yeah.
And so the Council of Trent, even though the Pope, the current Pope Francis, is a very liberal Pope, he still has not renounced or overturned those strict and very harsh anathemas, has he?
No, he has not. He kind of ignores them, but they're there. So I just read an article by someone else in the Catholic Church, another church official, that actually, when the Pope was saying he was kind of celebrating Luther on October 31st, this church official was saying, well, you know, what we believe about Luther is written in the Council of Trent. So the Pope seems to forget that or ignore it.
Well, we are going to our second hour now. And by the way, Tyler in Mastic Beach, Long Island, if you're listening, we're switching subjects now. So if you have a question that you'd like to send us on René of France, who is quite a fascinating figure from history, a very little known figure, but quite a fascinating one. I know that Tyler was wanting to ask a question about Luther, but if you would like to ask a question about René of France, instead of our new topic now as we go into the second hour of the broadcast, we would love to hear from you. And we would love to hear from anybody out there who has a question for Simonetta Carr at chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. And please include your first name, your city and state, and your country of residence if you live outside of the USA. Don't go away. We will be right back after these messages with Simonetta Carr.
Hi, I'm Chris Arnzen, host of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, here to tell you about an exciting offer from World Magazine, my trusted source for news from a Christian perspective. Try World at no charge for 90 days and get a free copy of R.C. Sproul's book, Relationship Between Church and State. I rely on World because I trust the reporting. I gain insight from the analysis, and World provides clarity to the news stories that really matter. I believe you'll also find World to be an invaluable resource to better understand critical topics with a depth that's simply not found in other media outlets. Armed with this coverage, World can help you to be a voice of wisdom in your family and your community. This trial includes bi-weekly issues of World Magazine, on-scene reporting from World Radio, and the fully shareable content of World Digital. Simply visit wmg.org/ironsharpens to get your World trial and Dr. Sproul's book all free. No obligation with no credit card required. Visit World News Group at wng.org/ironsharpens today.
I'm James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. The New American Standard Bible is perfect for daily reading or in-depth study. Used by pastors, scholars, and everyday readers, the NASB is widely embraced and trusted as a literal and readable Bible translation. The NASB offers clarity and readability while maintaining high accuracy to the original languages, which the NASB is known for. The NASB is available in many editions like a topical reference Bible. Researched and prepared by biblical scholars devoted to accuracy, the new topical reference Bible includes contemporary topics relevant to today's issues. From compact to giant print Bibles, find an NASB that fits your needs very affordably at nasbible.com. Trust, discover, and enjoy the NASB for yourself today. Go to nasbible.com. That's nasbible.com.
Tired of box store Christianity? Of doing church in a warehouse with all the trappings of a rock concert? Do you long for a more traditional and reverent style of worship? And how about the preaching? Perhaps you've begun to think that in-depth biblical exposition has vanished from Long Island. Well, there's good news. Wading River Baptist Church exists to provide believers with a meaningful and reverent worship experience, featuring the systematic exposition of God's Word. And this loving congregation looks forward to meeting you. Call them at 631-929-3512 for service times. 631-929-3512. Or check out their website at wrbc.us. That's wrbc.us.
Are you a Christian looking to align your faith and finances? Then you'll want to check out Thrivent Financial. We're not your typical financial services provider. We're a not-for-profit Fortune 500 organization that helps our nearly 2.4 million members be wise with money. We provide guidance that reflects your values so you can protect what matters most. We help members live generously and strengthen the communities where they live, work, and worship. Learn more about the Thrivent story by contacting me, Mike Gallagher, financial consultant, at 717-254-6433. Again, 717-254-6433.
We know we were made for so much more than ordinary life.
Blending faith, finances, and generosity. That's the Thrivent story.
We were made to thrive.
Welcome back. This is Chris Sarnes, and if you just tuned in, our guest today for the full 2 hours with 1 hour to go is Simonetta Carr. The first hour we addressed her book on Martin Luther, and now we are addressing a second book of hers, which is a truly fascinating story of René of France. And just to give you a little background, René of France is little known today, but this fascinating and often controversial woman was a correspondent of John Calvin. She loved the Reformation, but in 16th century Italy, such a position could not be lightly held. In a husband, the Duke of Ferrara, who served the Pope and was determined to oppose René, plus the complexity and intrigues of Italian society of the time, and you have all the ingredients for a gripping biography. Simonetta Carr has succeeded in making the reader of her fine book a contemporary, yes, even a close friend of René of France. Based on the sources written with great quality and a pleasure to read, it is the fascinating story of this royal woman. I look forward to more of such books. And that was a commendation by Professor Dr. Herman J. Silderhuis, Professor of Church History and the Church Polity at the Theological University of Apeldoorn in the Netherlands, and author of several books on John Calvin. But it's such a great pleasure to have you on for the full 2 hours today, Simonetta. I thank you for taking time out of your schedule to do this. How did you first discover this obscure woman from history, Renée of France?
Well, of course, I am very interested in the Reformation in Italy. You know, being from Italy, I've been very interested in that. So I read about different people that lived at that time, and I just studied how they reacted to the Reformation. There were practically three. Apart from the staunch Catholics, but people who were interested in the Protestant doctrines, which were many, because people were basically tired of the church and its corruption and abuses. So there were different reactions, but some people they embraced fully the Protestant teachings. Some people were only looking for a reformation of a moral reformation, and they were tired of popes that lovers and children and accumulated huge amounts of money, and the abuses of the church were countless at that time. So there were people who were trying to change that, people who tried to, they just lived, went along with it and made fun of it. There were just very different reactions. But of the people who were the closest to the Protestant doctrine, some people really understood the doctrine of justification by faith alone, which is the cornerstone of the Reformation. And then at that point, they had to either hide it and go in, pretend that they were still Catholic, and Calvin called them Nicodemites, like Nicodemus. In his view. And then others were left Italy. And there was a small group of other people who stayed in Italy, and many of them got killed or imprisoned for their faith.
So how did Renée wind up becoming the wife of the Duke of Ferrara?
Well, she was French. By birth. So she grew up in France, and in France, actually, she was introduced to Protestant doctrines by people around her. The sister of the King of France was a Protestant-leaning woman, Marguerite of Navarre. And then also other people around Renée, some of her servants, her nanny was actually Protestant. So yeah, she grew up learning Protestant doctrines, but at that time, she was involved in the political world of that time. So her father arranged her marriage with Duke Ercole of Este in Ferrara, and at that time women didn't have too much of a say. Sometimes even men didn't have much of a say if the family wanted you to marry someone, especially these noble families. They arranged marriages.
So she was already acquainted with the teachings of the Protestant Reformation in France, and she was going into a marriage with somebody who was still very loyal to the Pope and the Roman Catholic Church.
Yes, and that was very common at that time. And I'm not really sure why, but I found out that many women at that time were favorable to the Protestant doctrines much more than the men.
Huh, interesting.
I don't know why, especially in Italy and France. Some people say it's because they had more time to read and study, because we're talking about the women of nobility, you know, so they definitely had more time. The men went to war. I don't know if that's the only reason, but I really don't know the reason. But it happened quite often, and Calvin had to address many of these problems, because there were many women, Protestant women married to Catholic men, and Calvin and others had to think and pray and see how to resolve the situations. And he basically encouraged most of them to stay in their marriage unless the husband was abusive. But, you know, there were different different circumstances, and people reacted as they were led.
And, you describe her marriage to the Duke of Ferrara as a stormy one. Tell us about that.
I don't think it's only because of her religious beliefs. There were a few other things. I think Renee was a big spender. She spent a lot. she was also very generous, so much of her money went to help others. But she came to Ferrara with her own court of French French helpers, you know, her servants, and she had her own court, basically. Lots of people that came from France with her, and she was very generous with them. She gave them big salaries and everything. So that was one thing he didn't agree with. In fact, he sent a few of them away after a while. And so there was a combination of that reason and the fact that many of them were Protestant. So for him, it was, I think initially he didn't really care. You were talking about people being nominal Catholics. I think people are nominal Catholics even at that time. And I don't think he cared too much, except when it became a political issue, because the Pope started to say, you know, you have a group of Lutherans in your own home, and that was not acceptable, obviously, to the Pope. And the Pope at that time, I don't know how many people realize this, but he was a very powerful political figure. Ferrara was a small duchy in Italy, and it was very easy for the Pope, for the Emperor, for just about anybody to take over Ferrara. And in fact, they eventually did much later in history. But the Duke of Ferrara had to build alliances in order to survive. And that was very, very common at that time. And so that played into the equation. Do you want to risk losing your rule, you know, your country? And or do you want to appease the Pope and then survive? So most rulers said they want to survive.
Well, we have BB from Cumberland County, Pennsylvania, who wants to know how Renee developed a personal relationship with John Calvin when she was in Italy, married to a Roman Catholic Duke, and Calvin was by the time perhaps in Switzerland.
Yeah, Calvin had to leave France. He was from France and he was living in France, but he had to leave because of persecution against the Protestants. So he traveled for a while, and in his travels, he also went to Ferrara, and most likely, from what we know, he went in incognito. He didn't say who he was, but he stayed at that at the court of Renee, so she was able to be in touch with him.
Oh, you said that he went there incognito, in disguise or something,
yes,
right?
In disguise, I think he used. Well, not so much. I mean, I don't think in those days they needed to so much disguise their appearance because they didn't have newspapers and internet, but he just changed his name, yeah. So he stayed with her for a while, and he had a big influence on her. She respected him very much, and there were other things, you know, they were both from France, they were both pretty much the same age, so it was it's quite interesting to see their friendship, how it developed. And there was a mutual respect. Calvin always respected her, and he was always convinced that she had a strong faith, even if she fell very often and she didn't look strong at all. But to me, that's very encouraging. He always believed that she was one of God's children.
Now, did Calvin know before going to her court to stay there for a time? Did he know prior to that that Renee had some kind of affinity or affection towards the doctrine of the Reformation?
Yeah, I mean, we don't know. There's a lot that we don't know exactly, but I'm quite sure he knew, and most likely it was Margaret of Navarre that referred them to Rene, that sent him there, because Margaret was also a very close friend of Calvin.
And Bibi, if you give us your full mailing address in Cumberland County, Pennsylvania, you're getting a free copy of Renee of France by our guest Simonetta Carr, compliments of EP Books, and also compliments of Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service, who will be shipping that out to you at no charge to us or to you. CVBBS.com, CV for Cumberland Valley, BBS for Bible Book Service.com. We look forward to shipping that out to you, and you should get that, God willing, within a week or so. We have Harrison in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, who wants to know if Renee was actually risking her life by this correspondence with John Calvin in Italy, or was Italy a safer place at this time to be conducting this kind of correspondence?
Yeah, Italy was not a safe place at all. A lot of people did risk their lives. It depended also where you lived, in some places more than others. But she was a little more privileged than others just because of her status. She was the Duchess. She was actually of higher nobility in France, so she had some support from her family in France too, but not so much, not religious support, but at least political support and protection. So she was a little more privileged than other people who probably risked their life even more. But yeah, if even if she didn't completely risk her life, she risked in other ways too, because at one point they took her daughters from her and told her she would never see them again.
Wow.
So there were other ways. Yeah, there were other ways that they used to coerce her into denying her faith.
Now, I'm assuming that since you have described their marriage as stormy, partially, not only because of her being somewhat of a spendthrift, but partially because of her theological views, I'm assuming that she was very open with her husband, the Duke of Ferrara, about these theological differences. And was she challenging him? Was she evangelizing him? How would this manifest itself, these differences that turned the marriage into a stormy relationship?
Yeah, we don't really know everything. It's hard to say, you know, there's not so much written about the relationship, but yeah, she was fairly open about it. Only around the end, when he became more hostile toward her, she tried to hide some of this, the things she was doing. But he actually gave her a villa outside of Ferrara. And again, this was very common at that time, you know, for husbands to give a villa to their wives. So anyway, she had a villa somewhere else, and she was able to stay there a certain period of the year. It was actually in a place that is terribly humid and hot in the summer, so I suspect she didn't stay there in the summer. But she had more freedom there. The husband didn't go there as much, and she had a whole group of Protestants. And one thing she was doing, she was receiving a lot of Protestants from other countries where they were more openly persecuted, and she kept them with her. But all this came to the knowledge of the church when the Pope found out. Obviously, they were not happy about that. In 1542, the Roman Catholic Church became especially fierce against the Protestants. They reopened the Roman Inquisition, which had existed before but had been closed, and they reopened it, and they started to persecute people quite seriously. So at that time, things became much more difficult for Renee.
So she was actually harboring Protestant refugees, for lack of a better term. She was hiding them and protecting them as long as she could. Did they eventually have to flee from her because of the awareness that the Vatican had of their existence and their location and so on?
Yes, especially toward the end, after 1542, and when things started to tighten, to get tighter for her too, then obviously the other people had to leave also. And something that's very interesting to me at that time is that she was pretty much alone. She didn't have a pastor. She didn't have a church. She had all these friends, but not a real organized church around her. Calvin sent a pastor to her at that time. So basically this pastor really risked his life by going to visit Renee and to try to be of support, and especially to just reach the word regularly, you know, as we all need, you know, because it's quite difficult. It's practically impossible to be a Lone Ranger Christian. Yeah. so it was very difficult for her to keep her faith without a pastor to lead her and keep her on the straight way. There were also a lot of, it was a time you can't just define with black and white. You know, there was a lot of different views, even within Protestants. So not all of them were their faith was Orthodox. You know, you had people who were anti-Trinitarian. Some people rebelled against the church, and they went all the way into the point of becoming heretics. She needed guidance. She needed guidance, and I think it was very brave for this French pastor to go, sent by Calvin, and just to go and stay with her. He really risked his life.
By the way, Harrison in Mechanicsburg, if you give us your full mailing address, you'll also get a free copy of Renee of France by our guest Simonetta Carr, compliments of EP Books, which stands for Evangelical Press, and this will be shipped out to you free of charge by Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service, cvbbs.com, CV for Cumberland Valley, BBS for BibleBookService.com. We are going to our final station break right now, and we do have a couple of people still waiting to have their questions asked and answered by Simonetta, so we appreciate your patience. We will get to you as soon as possible, but if anybody would like to join them to have your own question asked and answered on the air by Simonetta, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com. chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Please give us at least your first name, your city and state, and your country of residence if you live outside of the USA. Don't go away. We are going to be right back with Simonetta Carr and more on Renee of France.
Paul wrote to the church at Galatia, "For am I now seeking the approval of man or of God? Or am I trying to please man? If I were still trying to please man, I would not be a servant of Christ." Hi, I'm Mark Lukens, pastor of Providence Baptist Church. We are a Reformed Baptist church, and we hold to the London Baptist Confession of Faith of 1689. We are in Norfolk, Massachusetts. We strive to reflect Paul's mindset to be much more concerned with how God views what we say and what we do than how men view these things. That's not the best recipe for popularity, but since that wasn't the apostles' priority, it must not be ours either. We believe, by God's grace, that we are called to demonstrate love and compassion to our fellow man, and to be vessels of Christ's mercy to a lost and hurting community around us, and to build up the body of Christ in truth and love. If you live near Norfolk, Massachusetts, or plan to visit our area, please come and join us for worship and fellowship. You can call us at 508-528-5750, that's 508-528-5750, or go to our website to email us, listen to past sermons, worship songs, or watch our TV program entitled Resting in Grace. You can find us at ProvidenceBaptistChurchMA.org, that's ProvidenceBaptistChurchMA.org, or even on SermonAudio.com. Providence Baptist Church is delighted to sponsor Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
I'm Chris Arnzen, host of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, and here's one of my favorite guests, Todd Friel, to tell you about a conference he and I are going to.
Hello, this is Todd Friel, host of Wretched Radio and Wretched TV, and occasional guest on Chris's show.
Iron. Criticizing Iron.
I think that's what it's called. Hoping that you can join Chris and me at the G3 conference in Atlanta, my new hometown. It is going to be a bang-up conference called the G3 Conference, celebrating the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation with Paul Washer, Steve Lawson, D.A. Carson, Vody Baucom, Conrad and Bayway, Phil Johnson, James White, and a bunch of other people. We hope to see you there. Learn more at g3conference.com, g3conference.com.
Thanks, Todd, I think. See you at the Iron Sharpens Iron exhibitors booth.
Lynbrook Baptist Church on 225 Earl Avenue in Lynbrook, Long Island, is teaching God's timeless truths in the 21st century.
Our church is far more than a Sunday worship service.
It's a place of learning where the scriptures are studied and the preaching of the gospel is clear and relevant.
It's like a gym where one can exercise their faith through community involvement.
It's like a hospital for wounded souls where one can find compassionate people and healing.
We're a diverse family of all ages,
enthusiastically serving our Lord Jesus Christ
in fellowship, play, and together.
Hi, I'm Pastor Bob Waldeman, and I invite you to come and join us here at Lynbrook Baptist Church and see all that a church can be.
Call Lynbrook Baptist at 516-599-9402. That's 516-599-9402, or visit lynbrookbaptist.org. That's lynbrookbaptist.org.
Iron Sharpens Iron welcomes Solid Rock Remodeling to our family of sponsors. Serving South Central Pennsylvania, Solid Rock Remodeling is focused on discovering, understanding, and exceeding your expectations. They deliver personalized project solutions with exceptional results. Solid Rock Remodeling offers a full range of home renovations, including kitchen and bath remodeling, decks, porches, windows and doors, roof and siding, and more. For a clear, detailed professional estimate, call this trustworthy team of problem solvers who provide superior results that stand the test of time. Call Solid Rock Remodeling at 717-697-1981, 717-697-1981, or visit solidrockremodeling.com. That's solidrockremodeling.com. Solid Rock Remodeling, bringing new life to your home.
Welcome back. This is Chris Arnzen. If you just tuned us in for the last 90 minutes and the next half hour to come, our guest has been and will continue to be Simonetta Carr. The first hour of the program, we discussed her wonderful book on Martin Luther with the title Martin Luther, which is a part of the Christian Biographies for Young Readers series published by Reformation Heritage Books. Now, in our second hour, we have been discussing René of France, which has been published by EP Books, or Evangelical Press, as it's also known. And if you'd like to join us on the air with a question about René of France, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com. chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Before I return to our discussion, I just want to remind you that our friends at the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals are going to be hosting the Doctrines of Grace Conference this weekend, Friday and Saturday, November 11th and 12th in Quakertown, Pennsylvania. And I intend to be there. So I hope to meet many of you in the Iron Sharpens Iron audience who also attend this conference. The speakers include Dr. Joel Beakey, who I'm sure Simonetta Carr must know who Dr. Beakey is, since the book on Martin Luther that she wrote was published by Reformation Heritage Books, the very publisher that was founded by Dr. Joel Beakey. He is going to be there. He's the president of Puritan Reformed Theological Seminary in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He's a prolific writer, and he's been a guest on Iron Sharpens Iron many times. One of my favorite guests, one of my favorite of all-time preachers. Another speaker who we've had on Iron Sharpens Iron, who will be at the Doctrines of Grace Conference, is Anthony Carter. Tony Marita will also be there, who I have not yet met or spoken to. I'm looking forward to meeting him. And Richard Taylor and Timothy Whitmer. If you'd like to find out more information on how to register for this conference, go to alliancenet.org. That's alliancenet.org, and go to the very top of the page and click on events. And the very first event will be the Doctrines of Grace Conference, November 11th and the 12th in Quakertown, Pennsylvania. It's being held at the Grace Bible Fellowship Church on 1811 Old Bethlehem Pike North in Quakertown. Go to alliancenet.org to register, and please mention Iron Sharpens Iron when you register, and let them know that we are the ones that referred you to the Doctrines of Grace Conference. And we thank Bob Brady and the whole gang over there at the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals for hosting such really important and wonderful Bible conferences. And as I said before, if you'd like to join us on the air for the next 25 minutes or so, we are going to be continuing our discussion on René of France with our guest Simonette Akar. And our email address is chrisarnson@gmail.com, chrisarnson@gmail.com. Arnie in Perry County, Pennsylvania, wants to know, Simonetta, if René of France ever regained a relationship with her children and was able to teach them the doctrines of the Reformation as well, and if there was any fruit born out of that in their lives. In other words, did they ever become faithful Bible-believing Christians, also known as theologically faithful Protestants?
Yeah, that's kind of a sad story in some ways. I mean, René didn't have much of a, much authority over the education of the boys. You know, traditionally at that time, the boys were educated by the father. The father would choose tutors for them and address them. And certainly, the way the decisions they made in life were largely determined by the father. So the oldest son was going to be the heir of the duchy, and then the youngest son, as was very common in the, at that time, was sent to a ecclesiastical career. So he became a priest, and then continued his career in the church, in the Catholic Church. So she didn't have much say about that. Actually, I think she had no say about that. She just had to accept it. She had more influence on the girls. She had three girls, and the oldest one stayed in the Protestant faith. The other two, we don't know much about them, but they did marry. All three of them actually married Catholics. And again, René didn't have much say in this situation. So anyway, she did influence her daughters, and we don't know completely how they turned out, except for the oldest one that we know she stayed Protestant.
Well, thank you very much for that email, and give us your full mailing address, and you will also receive a free copy of this book, René of France by Simonette Akar, Compliments of Evangelical Press or EP Books, and also of CVBBS.com, who will be shipping that out to you. Thank you very much, Arnie, in Perry County, Pennsylvania. Did René live out a long life, being spared of physical persecution and execution? What became of her after being a well-known rebel against the Church of Rome?
Yeah, she actually did live a long life. She risked her life a few other times. She moved to France, and France was not a peaceful country either. She moved there after her husband died, because at that time she was obviously free from any, she didn't have to answer to him anymore. So she went to France. She lived in a castle there, being a noble, of noble birth. And the same thing in France. She also helped many Protestants. But France had its own problems at that time. There were the conflict between the Catholics and the Protestants. So in France, it actually turned into a war. So she was in the middle of all that. So she lived that difficult situation too. And she actually was in Paris at the time of St. Bartholomew massacre when the Protestants were killed.
Yeah.
Yes, so she risked her life at that time too because she was right there. But she managed to leave and go back to her castle. They were very difficult times. it was very difficult. She managed to survive also. At one point, she denied her faith, and that's one part of the book that actually, it's obviously disappointing, but that's one of the reasons why I was interested in writing this book, because we have some books about other Protestants of that time. There were glowing stories of a strong faith, and the daughter of Margaret of Navarre, Jean of Navarre, she was a strong Protestant, and there were others at that time. But Renée, actually, her faith faltered, and she did deny her faith at one point. Later, she went back to it. And to me, that was interesting. It was interesting for different things. One of the reasons was that, like I mentioned before, that Calvin never gave up on her, and he always believed that the Spirit was still working in her, that she was still a child of God. And to me, that was very comforting, just to see that. And in fact, she did die a Protestant. Sometimes we need to see some of those stories too, stories of people who fall.
Oh, yeah.
And then they get up again.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, for instance, that's one of the reasons why the life of Thomas Cranmer is very, very fascinating to me. He, who wrote the 39 Articles of Religion for the Church of England when they were going through the English Reformation, a very Calvinist creed, the 39 Articles, and Thomas Cranmer was very Calvinistic in his theological leanings. And when King Henry VIII died and the Church of England went back to being under Roman Catholic control, his life was threatened, and he, out of fear for his life, recanted his Protestant faith, but then later recanted his recantation. And when he was being executed, he was being burned alive, he asked that the hand that signed his initial recantation of Protestantism be burned first, as a sign that he repented and regretted ever having signed the recantation of Protestantism to begin with. And they granted his request, and they did burn his hand first before consuming his entire body with flames. But very fascinating story. Now, what were the circumstances that you know of that would cause Renée to recant her faith? Was it fear of her life, or was it just something else?
Yeah, I think it was fear. I don't know if so much of her life. I don't know if the husband could have killed her. You know, again, she was of a certain status, and she was she had somewhat the protection of France, being from a noble family in France. She was related to the King of France, actually. But I think she partially was the fact that, like I said, they took her daughters away from her, and she could not see them again, although they were not children, but still, you know, for a mother, that's very difficult. And then also, they just didn't leave her alone. That somebody going to her every day, basically telling her, you have to recant, you have to recant. And they tried everything to make her, what they wanted her to do is, go back to attend the Roman Catholic Mass and just at least outwardly agree with it and confess, go to a confession, and they would have been happy just with a very formal adherence to the Roman Catholic Church. So she finally gave up and did it. But, you know, it was very, very sad. Many other Protestants denounced her for it. But, and, you know, Calvin continued to write to her, and that was, to me, was very comforting and very encouraging.
CJ from Lindenhurst, Long Island, New York, wants to know if the husband of René of France, the Duke of Ferrara, was truly in love with René in spite of their differences because of the fact that she remained alive and died of an old age rather than being executed. I mean, did he... did the Duke of Ferrara protect her, even though he was angry with her and disputed with her over their differences? He obviously didn't turn her over to the Roman Catholic Church for persecution.
Yeah. I'm not sure. It's very hard to tell. I mean, obviously there was some love at some point. I am just not really sure how much. But I don't know if she would have died, not so much because of her husband, but just because to kill a person like a duchess, or she was actually a French princess, that would have been a very big step for the Catholic Church. I don't think they ever did at that time.
Well, they did it in England. They did it in England.
In England, yes. In England, definitely. Yeah, it was different. Yeah, I don't think in Italy or France, actually, ever happened. So I don't know. I don't know if it was the fact that she was a princess that saved her, or their husband maybe did have some love for her.
Thank you, CJ, and you also have won a free copy of René of France by Simonetta Carr, published by EP Books, and God willing, you'll be getting that in the mail shortly. We are once again getting a question from Lam Lam in Valley Stream, Long Island, New York. As with any other books, one will first look at the table of contents and the comments in the back of the book. As looking into the content, the titles of the first chapter and the last might create some sort of confusion or false impression on the relationship of René of France and Calvin, which might mislead readers to ideas other than the doctrinal, theological, and Reformation. Can you describe a little more about the last chapter, and what is her contribution or influence to the country in terms of Reformation in history? I think that she may be implying that it may have looked like a romantic relationship. I may be putting words in Lam Lam's mouth, but did anybody suspect there being some kind of a romantic connection between Calvin and René?
No, I don't think anybody ever suspected, no.
Okay, and anything else you would like to comment?
Calvin had many many women's friends, and it was very common at that time. Like I said, there were so many women that were Protestant, and so men like Calvin or other pastors, they had to spend a lot of time corresponding with them and helping them and guiding them, so it was quite common. To my knowledge, now there was never any thought that this was went beyond a simple friendship. Even more than friendship, it was a pastor and and a sheep, basically. He was pestering her.
And who
yeah.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying that their relationship was mostly, she needed his encouragement throughout her life because she was very much by herself. Even if she was surrounded by other Protestants, you know, there were people who came and left. Her husband sent many of her closest friends away because he thought they were having too much of an influence on her. So these letters by Calvin were very important to her.
And who passed into glory first? Was it Rene or John Calvin? As far as who died, who entered into heaven first?
Died first, John Calvin.
Okay, and did he always, until his death, have some kind of connection or correspondence with Rene?
Yes, he kept corresponding until the end. And to me, this is very, very encouraging. His letters are wonderful. You know, I couldn't include them all. I included only certain excerpts, but if anybody can read them, actually, they are online. You can read all of Calvin's letters. They're very encouraging.
Well, I want you to make sure our listeners know what you primarily want etched in their hearts and minds about Rene of France before they leave this program today.
I think the main thing I want readers to get from this book is how much God continues to work in our hearts, and you know, the Spirit works in our heart. God doesn't give up on His children. And just to be encouraged and to just keep going. And that's what John Calvin told Rene. He said, you know, even if you fall, you just get up and keep going.
Amen. And what other books have you written that we can perhaps do interviews on in the future? I know that one we already mentioned before is the story of Lady Jane Grey. If you could give us a little information about that.
Yeah, I wrote 10 books for Reformation Heritage Books, and Martin Luther is the 10th of the series. Lady Jane, I think it was the 5th one, and that's also a very important character in the Reformation. She was Queen of England for only a very short time, less than 2 weeks. And so basically she, right now we call her Lady Jane, we don't even call her Queen Jane. But she was a queen. She was a Queen of England at that time. And she was right at the time when King Edward was ruling and then died, and then Mary, his sister Mary, took over. She's famous as Bloody Mary for her persecution of Protestants. And so Lady Jane was in the middle of all that, and she did give her life for her faith, and she was only 16, 17 at that time. So I think that was a character that can really encourage young readers.
Well, you have quite a lineup of books that I would love to eventually interview you on all of them. You have John Calvin you've written on. You've written on Augustine of Hippo. As we've already discussed, Martin Luther today on this program, Marie Durand, we have Lady Jane Grey that we just mentioned, John Knox, we have Jonathan Edwards, and Athanasius, who I mentioned earlier.
Okay.
Athanasius against the world, Athanasius contra mundum, I think is the phrase, when he was battling against the entire church nearly who that had succumbed to Arianism. John Owen, the great Puritan writer, Anselm of Canterbury, and the list goes on. You've got quite a impressive list of books, and I hope to have you back on the program very soon. And we do have one more questioner, a listener in the audience, who is, let's see, this is RJ from White Plains, New York, and he wants to know, how did you become such a prolific writer coming from Italy and entering here in the United States? You seem to have really captured the attention of some impressive reform publishing companies. That's a very good question.
I don't know. I don't know. quick answer, I don't know. When I wrote John Calvin, that was my first book, I didn't even think I would write books. It didn't come into my mind I would ever write a book. I just thought this book needed to be written, and I asked, in fact, I asked another person in my church, a student with Mr. Seminary who had studied church history. I wanted him to write it because he gave some Sunday school lectures on church history, and I said, why don't you write this series of books? And he kept saying no. And so finally he said, why don't you try? And I did. So, you know, quite honestly, I really don't know how it happened. I think, you know, God wanted it to happen, and Reformation Heritage said yes. So that's how I started, and that's how I've been going since then.
Well, praise God for that. And, well, I want to make sure that our listeners also have the websites of these publishers. We have heritagebooks.org is the website for Reformation Heritage Books. Any of you who either didn't win a book today, or you want to, even if you won, you want to get more copies for your family, friends, and loved ones, especially with Christmas coming up, heritagebooks.org. And just type Simonetta in the search engine. There are not too many people named Simonetta. In fact, Simonetta, that is my guest today, is the first Simonetta I have ever spoken with. And I'm sure all of her books that they publish will come up. And there's also EP Books, which is Evangelical Press, epbooks.org, EP for Evangelical Press, books.org. And you could do a search on Simonetta Carr, C-A-R-R, there as well. You could also go to Cumberland Valley Bible Book Services website, CV for Cumberland Valley, BBS for Bible Book Service .com. That's CVBBS.com for Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service. And do you have any personal contact information that you care to share?
Yeah, if you do, you can, I have a website, is www.simonetta-car.com, and you can find my books there too.
So that's Simonetta, S-I-M-O-N-E-T-T-A, dash, C-A-R-R,
yeah.
.com.
Yeah.
And so I hope that all of you will go to that website and frequent it and get to know Simonetta. And I hope to have you back on the program, Simonetta, because I've found it an absolute joy to have you on the program today.
Thank you. Thank you for putting up with my accent.
Well, I hope I did an adequate job on my end, because I think I kept up with you fairly well, understanding what you were saying. I don't recall you saying anything that I didn't understand.
Oh, that's great.
Well, I want to thank everybody who listened today, especially those who took the time to write questions. I hope to see many of you at the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals Conference in Quakertown. Remember to go to AllianceNet.org, AllianceNet.org, to look up information on that conference this Friday and Saturday. And I hope you all always remember for the rest of your lives that Jesus Christ is a far greater Savior than you are a sinner. God bless you all, and look forward to hearing from you with your questions.